This is the help desk. May I have your client ID?
Whiskey Bravo 082019.
An elderly man gazes out of the window of a remote house. A young man is driving recklessly along a country road.
Are you calling on a secure line?
Negative.
Wait one for security. Line secured. For verification, may I have values 1, 4 and 8 of your protocol?
Tango Foxtrot, Tango.
An acne-scarred man's lips tremble with emotion as a sheet is pulled off a dead body. A woman pays for cigarettes.
Merci à vous. Bonne journée.
There's an injured man in the back of the car.
You are verified and moving on.
Progress report on job number 3822, Golf Delta, Sierra Bravo 2.
Please hold.
As the woman walks along a quiet street, a man steps out of a side road and starts to follow her. As two men head towards a house, one of them pumps a shotgun.
Thank you for waiting. I will read that job number back to you.
As the man closes in on the woman, she turns to him and sees a flick knife in his hand.
That's correct. The viruses have been quarantined. Engineers are on site. We await further updates.
Thank you.
The armed men are at the older man's door. The homeowner shares a look with a younger man reading a paper. Philip Glenister. Hidden. A man in his late 40s, wearing a suit jacket and a white shirt with the collar unbuttoned, is staring at a woman with a tear spilling down her cheek. She gives him a pleading look, and he seems uncomfortable.
What are you doing?
The man shifts.
I don't know what to say. Sorry.
When did you decide this?
Francis,
When? When?
I don't know. It wasn't an instant thing. But I've got back-to-back appointments.
Appointments? You're talking about appointments? This is my life, Harry!
A woman is making her way up a flight of stairs. She's wearing a ring on a thin chain round her neck. She pushes open a door stenciled with the words H. Venn and Co. Solicitors and speaks to a young man sitting at a desk.
I'm Gina Hawks. I have an 11 o'clock appointment with Mr. Venn.
Mr. Venn's 10:30 is running a little over. Why don't I see if I can find you another appointment?
I'll wait.
Gina takes a seat and picks up a newspaper. The young man, Matt, puts a call through to Harry's office.
Don't answer that.
Harry looks torn. He goes to pick up the receiver, but Frances slams her hand down on top of his.
Let go.
Matt ends the call, and Frances gets up from her seat and starts to slowly walk around Harry's desk. The paper Gina is holding has a front page headline reading, Worsley struggles to keep coalition alive.
Do you think we'll pull it off? Worsley, the coalition.
I really don't know.
Are you really going to give this up?
Francis, look, you don't have to do this.
I'll
catch cold.
You sure you don't want to make another appointment?
It's essential I see Mr. Venn as soon as possible.
I've had enough of this.
Having rebuttoned her shirt, Francis comes storming out of his office and through the dingy reception area. Harry wearily gets up from his desk and crosses to the window. He watches people walking past a homeless man slumped on the pavement below.
This is Miss Hawkes, your 11 o'clock.
Please, come into my office.
I'd rather go out if that's okay.
Sure, please.
They head out of the building.
It's 11 o'clock on Tuesday, the 5th of July. The headlines this morning. Sensational allegations linking Prime Minister Brian Worsley to two secret offshore bank accounts have been leaked to a national newspaper. The claims come at a critical time for the Prime Minister in his ongoing attempts to form a new government, while rioting continues in the capital as tens of thousands turn out daily to protest and propose austerity measures. Up to 70 protesters have been injured.
I should warn you, the cough is terrible.
Harry and Gina are in a cafe.
I've drank worse.
You're a brave woman. What can I do for you?
I have a client. He's on a murder charge.
You're a lawyer. It's an interesting case.
It has a couple of unusual features, the first being that my client appears to be innocent.
What do you mean, really innocent?
As in, he didn't do it.
Well, that is unusual.
His name's Stephen Quirk.
Harry looks taken aback.
Stevie Quirk? What, little Stevie? What's this all about?
I told you.
Hey, listen, I don't get it. An expensive lawyer acting for a career criminal like Stevie Quirk. How did that happen then?
The usual way. He called my office. He told me he was innocent. I believe him. I'm thinking of sending the brief to Nigel Fountain. You don't approve of my choice of counsel?
Well, shouldn't that be Sir Nigel Fountain? No, I approve very much. I'm just wondering where all the money's coming from.
Mr. Quirk's innocence is not the only unusual feature. He also turned himself in.
So Stevie turned himself in. He confessed. But he's innocent.
I was getting to that.
Well, if you could get to a little bit faster, Gina, because I'm getting so confused here.
He confessed because he's terrified. So terrified, in fact, that he'd rather be in prison.
And what's he terrified of?
He won't tell me. He wants you to help him.
How?
He wants you to find someone for him.
Look, you're a smart woman. I can tell you're smart because you're not drinking the coffee. But I'm just a high street solicitor. Now, what you need is an inquiry agent. I'll be more than happy to recommend one.
Mr. Quirk wants you to find Joseph Francis Collins. I believe you know him.
Stevie Quirk and Joe Collins. You're building a case on them. Actually, you don't need an inquiry agent, Gina. What you need is a bloody magician.
I disagree. You have the special contacts my client needs.
He gives her a penetrating look.
What are you after?
I'm a lawyer doing my best to get justice for my client.
Do you know what gives you away, Gina? No lawyer uses the word justice when they're talking about their own client. Well, I don't know what game you've got going on here, but I'm not playing with you.
Mr. Quirk anticipated your reaction. He has some information that he's willing to pass on to you.
Information about what?
Your brother, Mark.
The injured man in the back of the car.
Mark?
The car's being chased by the police.
Mark, are you okay?
The chase is taking place in the past, and Harry is the young man at the wheel. In the present, he sits back down opposite Gina.
What did he say exactly? About Mark? His exact words?
Exactly as I've told you. I'm following the instructions of my client. You have my card. Thank you for the coffee.
She walks out, leaving Harry sitting in silence, his eyes flicking from side to side. He remembers the car pulling up outside the house and the two men getting out. One, Mark, is carrying a handgun. The other man, Hillman, is holding the shotgun.
Don't worry, Harry.
Harry is left in the car.
Don't worry, Harry.
In the present, Harry thoughtfully taps the expensive business card Gina has left for him. At the office, a phone rings.
Ben and Co.
I want you to find out what you can about a firm called Hodgkin's Truss Wilson.
Where are they? London?
I don't know. There's no address on the card.
Well, they're not showing up on Google.
What about Gina Hawks?
Nope. Nothing.
Nothing?
Nope.
Hang on, there's a number here. 07700900484.
Give it a ring and find out who they are.
484.
Okay, Frank Hanna called. He wants you to everyone.
The jury get back.
How long have they been out?
About an hour.
And they'll be out all day.
Harry hangs up and is once again swept away on a tide of remembrance. The sheet is pulled back from the body, revealing it to be Mark Venn. The older man standing over him is his father, George.
Mark.
The sheet is pulled back up again. Harry is driving, wearing a grim expression. A little later, he's being escorted along a perimeter by a prison guard. The guard opens a gate and walks with Harry across an exercise yard peopled with hostile inmates. An unshaven prisoner wearing glasses is sitting at a table in an interview room. The guard opens another gate, letting Harry step into what is essentially a holding cage before opening up another barred door and leading him further into the prison. They eventually reach the interview room.
Stevie, what's all this shit about my brother?
What, is that how you say hello, Harry, after all these years?
I want to know why you've been handing out this crap. What are you trying to sell, Stevie? You're going to tell me who killed Mark? Is that it?
I'm offering a deal here, right? You help me, you get what I know. Now that's all I've got to deal with, Harry, you understand?
How did you find Gina Hawks?
What do you mean?
Stevie, I couldn't find Gina Hawks, and people might say I'm somewhat better placed than you.
Yeah, someone give me her number.
Who?
I don't remember.
Well, she agrees to act for you. Why?
Well, you ain't got the hump, have you, Harry? Huh? Well, because I didn't come to you. Nah, you're an old pal, Harry. Yeah. Hey, let me shake your hand, eh? Just for the warm feel of it, yeah. I heard things wasn't going too good for you.
Well, you know, they could be worse.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's true.
Harry pulls his hand free of Stevie's grip.
What do you know about Mark? Who killed him? Tell me, now.
Yeah, you never guess who I bumped into. Paul Hillman. Straight up.
In the car.
Harry, move!
I'm doing my fucking best, Hillman!
Yeah, I see him, and yeah, he's like all bald now, but I recognise him. I saw Harry, Paul Hillman.
Yeah, there's just one problem, Stevie. Paul Hillman's dead. He has been for 20 years. My dad ID'd his body, same time he ID'd Mark's.
I saw him.
When?
A few days ago, just before I come in here. See, Harry, if Hillman's alive, what does that say about Mark?
Harry pins Stevie's head on the table.
What the fuck are you playing?
Harry! Please! Please! I see him and he's breathing like you and me!
You see the dead don't come back, Stevie.
I saw him!
Harry releases his grip.
Where did you see him?
Stevie pushes his glasses back up his nose.
I don't really remember.
You saw a dead man and you don't remember where?
On the tube.
What tube? Which station? What line?
I saw him. Right, I swear on my child's life.
Harry looks uncertain and swallows.
Why do you need me to find Joe Collins? How can Joe help you?
He's got something that can get me out of this.
What? You tell me or I'm out of here. What?
A laptop, right, and I'm not saying nothing more. I see, I can't.
You wouldn't be trying to set me up, would you, Stevie?
Set you up for what?
Something that happened a long time ago. Something where there's no statute of limitations.
If you don't find Joe for me, I am dead.
You want to relax, Stevie? They abolished the death penalty years ago. Now you got my number. You give me a call when you decide you want to tell me what the fuck is going on.
As Harry strides out, Stevie smirks. On his way through the complex, Harry gets a call on his mobile. Someone out of sight seems to be watching him. Matt's on the line.
Yeah.
Frank Hanna's called three times. He wants to know why
you're not answering your phone and why you're not there.
And Mr. Peters is here and Mrs. Crawford. What do you want me to tell him?
Clear the rest of the day. I'm not coming back.
Look, we represented a client, Joe Collins. Joseph Francis Collins, about 5 years ago.
Yeah, possession of Class A drugs.
Snaresbrook Crown Court.
Yeah, dig out his file.
Harry, I've got like a million things to do.
Call me when you got it.
Anything else?
Don't expect overtime.
Don't forget to call Frank Hanna.
Harry digs out Gina's card and dials the number on it.
Thank you for calling Hodgkin's Trust Milton.
Harry heads to his car, then catches sight of a man getting out of a vehicle that's just pulled up. Although the man is now considerably older, Harry recognises him as one of two officers who administered a vicious beating to him back in the past. The young Harry is slammed against a wall.
I wasn't there. We both know that's a lie, don't we? Hey?
As the man goes to the pedestrian entrance of the prison, Harry speeds after the car that dropped him off. While driving, he makes a call.
Hi, Harry.
I've just seen Fenton Russell. I need to see you, Lauren.
A little later, Harry is lying in bed beside a woman, Lauren. He takes a drag on a joint, then passes it over to her. She inhales and allows a stream of smoke to escape her mouth so that she can breathe it in through her nose.
Don't get any ideas, it's not happening again.
Harry looks pensive.
Why was Russell at Belmarsh?
He's a cop. Cops are like solicitors. They go to prisons from time to time.
She gets out of bed.
At the same time, the same day that I happened to be there.
Harry, it's a coincidence. Unpleasant, but just a coincidence.
Lauren, the man I went to see today told me that he saw Paul Hillman alive.
What, who? Who said that?
It's a face from the past. His name's Stevie Quirk. He was insistent. He told me he saw Hillman a few days ago.
Harry, Hillman is dead and gone. Someone's messing with your head.
Why?
I don't know why. But let it go. Harry, listen to me. Listen. Hillman is dead. That whole thing is gone, over. You need to let it go and move on. Come on, Michael's going to be home soon, and I don't want him finding you here.
She heads into a walk-in wardrobe and takes some trousers off a shelf.
You're always saying I don't see enough of him.
I don't want our son, who's already dealing with a lot of issues, finding you here like this. We're divorced. It'll confuse him.
Confuse him? What about me?
Come on, Harry, get up.
He stays in bed and watches her brush her hair.
You seeing anyone?
Yes.
A bit serious?
I don't know yet.
Where'd you meet him?
Internet dating. Don't look at me like that. That's how it's done now.
I broke up with Francis today.
What, again?
That's for good this time.
I'm sorry. She seemed like a nice girl. Don't know what she was doing with you.
What were you doing with me?
I'm not as nice as her.
Having tied her hair in a doubled-over ponytail and pulled on a cardigan, she heads out of the bedroom. Harry picks up his phone.
Harry Venn.
Gina Hawks, Mr. Venn.
You called?
Yeah, I went to see your client today.
And I'd like to talk to you more about his case.
I could see you for 20 minutes tonight at 10 o'clock.
20 minutes?
Yes, I have a meeting at 10:30.
Well, you do meetings late at night?
When they're important, yes.
All right, I'll be there at 10.
Where are you?
The Strand Hotel.
I'll meet you at the bar. The protesters were not one unified body. Different groups with different agendas surged off in all directions, some clearly prepared for violence. Shops in Pall Mall and Piccadilly were attacked and set alight. In Whitehall, police vans were smashed up and overturned by a mob of students and anarchists,
set
to number to 5,000. At the same time, the main body of protesters...
Feels different, doesn't it?
Why, what's different about it?
We don't have a government, for one thing.
Have you noticed? I haven't noticed.
Lauren moves from the kitchen counter to the fridge.
It's good to see you.
See. As Harry heads for the front door, a teenage boy comes in.
Hey, Mikey.
What are you doing here?
It's a nice way to greet your father.
Michael marches into the kitchen and glowers at his mother.
Michael, whatever else has happened between me and your mother, I'm still your father. Are you listening to me? You see that?
I see it every day.
Lauren, he needs to show some respect.
You need to spend more time with him.
They share a look.
Jesus, internet dating.
Goodbye, Harry.
The Prime Minister went on to say that those who have been trying to whip up an atmosphere of hysteria and panic must bear responsibility for the chaos and disorder on our streets. But the violence has put further pressure on the Prime Minister after this morning's allegations about his financial affairs. And Alexander Wentworth, tipped as a front-runner to take over, was amongst a growing number of voices describing the proposed coalition as unworkable.
Let's not kid ourselves. The reason the police are out there having to deal with these levels of disorder is that Brian Worsley is bankrupt. His coalition is falling to pieces, and he continues to present the same tired ideas. This is not a man who can lead this country out of the gravest crisis we've faced since the Battle of Britain.
Night has fallen over the city. Black cabs make their way along a narrow road, and Harry sips at a drink in the bar at the Strand. Gina joins him, wearing a form-fitting black dress with a low neckline.
Blimey. I was dressed like that for business meetings.
I didn't say it was business.
Can I get you a drink?
An old-fashioned.
One old-fashioned and a vodka tonic, sir.
You went to see Mr. Quirk.
Do you do a lot of crime, Gina?
Not as much as you, I believe.
I only ask because your client, Stevie Quirk, hasn't got a hope in hell. That's my advice. You can have that for free.
I deal in lost hopes, Mr. Van.
Harry. What kind of a criminal lawyer are you, Gina? In fact, are you any kind of criminal lawyer at all? Where did you do your articles? When did you qualify?
You came here to talk about the case.
Now you're more interesting.
I can assure you I'm not.
Where's that accent from?
Miss Hawks.
Thank you.
As the barman puts a drink in front of her, Harry scrutinizes Gina.
Who are you, Gina Hawks?
My client asked me to contact you in order to locate a witness he believes is crucial to his case. I carried out his instructions as I was obliged to. This does not give you the right to be insulting.
Okay. You name me one lawyer in London or anywhere in this country that you've had dealings with.
Isn't Sir Nigel Fountain good enough for you?
Oh, no, I know. Apart from this case, just one.
Gina stares at him evenly as she has a sip of her drink. Then she looks away and makes to leave.
If you'll excuse me. One thing I forgot to mention. Should you find Joe Collins, there will be a fee. Naturally.
Naturally. And what if I don't find him?
Oh, I think you're the kind of man who finds what he looks for.
Flattery's wasted on me, Gina. What sort of fee are we talking about here?
Shall we say 20,000?
Well, that should help find him. Why is Joe Collins worth £20,000 to you?
Thank you for the drink, Mr. Van.
Harry.
Having grabbed her wrist, he holds her hand.
You're wearing the wrong nail polish.
I quite like it.
No, it doesn't suit you.
So what would you suggest?
I suggest you cancel your next meeting and stay here and have another drink with me.
You're smart. Don't be too smart. Harry.
She walks away, and Harry looks thoughtful, then turns to the barman.
Excuse me. How do you know that lady?
She's a guest.
Can't leave her a note.
The barman gives him a piece of paper and a pen. Harry writes the note, then folds the paper in two and gives it back, along with some money from his wallet.
Surgeon.
Harry watches as the barman passes the note to a young bellboy who sets off with it. Harry follows him. The bellboy presses a button in a lift, and just before the doors close, Harry steps inside with him.
Which floor, sir?
3, please.
The bellboy yawns.
Oh, excuse me.
Long hours?
Yeah, very long.
Mind you, I better pay your fortune.
Yeah, you English make funny jokes that are not so funny.
True.
After you, sir.
Thank you.
Harry walks out of the lift and turns right. The bellboy heads left. After a moment, Harry doubles back, in time to see him slipping the note under a door.
Excuse me. How would you like to boost your pay?
like to.
How much would it cost me to get 5 minutes in this room? I'm not going to take anything. I'm not going to do anything. I just want to have a little look around. Nobody need know. 5 minutes.
500.
500, okay. So what, split the difference. Call it 30 quid. Terrific.
5 minutes.
The bellboy opens the door of the suite and Harry steps inside, scooping up the note from the carpet. He heads into a dressing room and turns on the light, then continues through the suite. In the bathroom, he picks up a container of prescription drugs made out to Gina named Zoplicone. He pockets them, then heads back into the living area and opens a laptop. It's password protected, so he soon walks away. He crosses to a pile of case files on a bureau. The first is labelled R vs. Quirk, and he pulls out the contents, which include mugshots of Stevie. He finds another folder labelled Moscati. Inside are a set of photographs. One is of a smiling man, the rest of the young woman who bought the cigarettes. As Harry leafs through the pictures, there's a flashback to the woman walking along the quiet street, then the man following her. Harry finds a newspaper cutting in French, then mugshots of the knife-wielding man bearing the name Tanzier. Harry puts the file aside, then freezes at the name on the following folder, Braddock. He slowly sinks onto a chair and opens out a cutting from the Daily Telegraph. Alongside a photo of Braddock, the man whose house Mark and Hillman visited, is a headline reading, Top Scientist Murdered, Nephew Maimed in Bungled Robbery. Harry remembers watching from the car as his brother made his way to Braddock's front door. A photocopied page bears a photograph of the youthful Harry alongside a headline reading, Braddock murders latest, police question local youth.
Harry, move it!
Harry looks increasingly agitated as he finds a picture of Mark in the file, then a photograph of a bold, hard man attached to a piece of paper detailing an address and a name, Officer Jason Stiles.
You said nobody was gonna get hurt!
That's what Stiles wanted.
Who's Stiles?
Harry tucks the picture of Stiles into his pocket, then picks up some very recent surveillance photos of himself. He goes through them, looking sickened and afraid. Later, he's sitting in the back of a cab, winding its way through the nighttime city. He's looking dazed and oblivious to his surroundings.
He has some information that he's willing to pass on to you.
Your brother, Mark.
I'm following the instructions of my client. He wants you to find someone for him. Joseph Francis Collins, I believe you know him.
Time seems to have slowed down as a jogger languidly runs across a road.
The news headlines this hour. Prime Minister Brian Worsley has responded for the first time to allegations about his financial involvement with Australian mining company Gold Seam.
You know what your critics say, that because of the ongoing allegations about your private financial arrangements...
These allegations are completely untrue. They are a total fabrication.
But because of these allegations, you do not have sufficient support in your own party, let alone the minority parties.
No, I completely refute that.
So why are no minority parties coming out for you, then?
I do have sufficient support in my own party. What I'm trying to do is build a coalition.
Harry is leafing through some paperwork at Matt's studenty-looking flat.
Harry.
What?
What are we looking for?
Anything that will help us find Mr. Joseph Collins.
A mugshot of Collins.
I've got some blow if you want it.
Matt snorts a line of coke, then picks up a beer and a cigarette and crosses to a record player, where he puts a needle on a disc. Harry looks disturbed by the music, then turns his attention back to a file in his hands. It's labelled J.F. Collins, and inside is a piece of paper headed Harry Venn and Her Majesty's Commissioners of Customs and Excise. After a moment's pause, Harry snorts the line of coke Matt left for him, then pops the cap off the bottle. He wakes up on a sofa to the sound of drilling outside. He blearily makes his way through the flat.
Turning to the extraordinary allegations made in yesterday's papers about the Prime Minister, we have the man himself here. Good morning, Prime Minister.
Good morning.
You were on television last night denying these allegations, yet this morning, RDO Media have published actual documents which show that Gold Seam, the Australian mining company at the centre of this affair, set up the accounts which you say you knew nothing of in April last year.
Look, I've got no way of knowing what Gold Seam did or did not do, but what I can say, with all the emphasis I can command, is that neither I nor any member of my family has any control over access to these money in these accounts.
So you said it wasn't going to happen again.
Michael's been arrested.
Harry remembers his brutal treatment at Russell's hands.
Want to go home to your mum and dear? You're not going on with a charge like this in front of you.
Hey, what happened?
Nicked a bloody car.
They charged him yet?
Yeah. They've given him bail, so he should be out soon.
Harry glances across at a woman sitting close by in the drab waiting room. A sullen-faced Michael is brought through by a uniformed officer. Harry and Lauren stand.
This way.
You okay?
Michael shrugs.
You just come this way, please.
I'll be back in a minute.
Lauren walks away.
Listen, don't worry. Worst case, you'll get 5 years. I'm kidding. I'll give you a rap on the knuckles.
Michael sits down, and Harry takes the seat beside him, then stares at him.
Why'd you do it? Michael.
Who are you?
I'm your father.
No. My father left.
Lauren returns to find them sitting in silence.
What were you thinking?
Sorry.
Go get in the car.
Michael gets up and walks out.
Thanks for coming. You should go home and shower. Change your clothes.
Listen, Lauren. Thank you for telling me about Michael.
It's okay.
She heads out. Later, Harry waits on a tube station platform, then is sitting on a train. He looks tense and his lips are twitching uncontrollably. He looks to one side as he travels on an up escalator, then transfers to his car. He stops and gets out, then heads towards his building. In the office, he takes a brown package out of a filing cabinet and pulls a handful of cash from it. He's counting it when Matt slopes in.
You're late.
Yeah, I had a heavy night.
Harry, it's Francis.
Should be interesting.
I don't understand what you're doing.
Turn it off.
What did I do wrong? I don't.
Turn it off.
Deserve this. You won't even talk to me. You won't
Matt.
Even.
I'll call the clerk of Bartle Court Chambers, see if he can get me 10 minutes with the head of Chambers, Nigel Fountain.
What do I tell him?
Tell him it's about the Quirk case.
You know you've got a hearing at Highbury?
I need to find Joe Collins. Tell you what, call Lisa Merrick, see if she'll cover for me.
You're gonna get struck off, Harry, you're not careful.
Thank you for your concern.
Concern is me and my job. And don't forget Frank Hanna!
Breaking news.
I don't want to say anything that could potentially inflame an already volatile situation.
Yeah, but you just have, haven't you?
Look, let's be clear here. We face grave challenges. And people are going to have to put aside their narrow partisan interests and pull together for the nation. Because there are some people, backed by certain media organisations with their own agenda, who simply do not want to see a second coalition and will do everything they can to derail us.
Well, that was the beleaguered Prime Minister talking to me earlier today. And I'm joined now by the man increasingly seen as the front-runner to challenge Worsley. That is, of course, Alexander Wentworth. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
Let me put it to you. Are you going to challenge the Prime Minister?
Well, listen, I haven't been saying that. What I am saying is that this country cannot continue to back a morally bankrupt Prime Minister when we're on the verge of crisis. That's no exaggeration.
But the Prime Minister says there are people who do not want political stability, who would prefer uncertainty and disorder. Are you one of those people?
Listen, I know the novels of Dan Brown too. I'm afraid my right honourable friend is confusing fact with fiction. This is a preposterous thing to say. It's paranoia.
A man and woman are sitting together at a table in the House of Commons dining room.
That's fine.
I didn't know anyone still drank Valpolicella. I thought it was more or less plonk.
They've improved it. It's very drinkable now.
Thank you. You're right, very tasty.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Mm. Ah, here he is, the man of the hour.
Sorry I'm late.
Alex.
Protesters again. It's impossible to get through central London.
Who'd have thought rioting in London would get to become practically a daily occurrence?
Oh, indeed.
I thought you were marvellous on the Today programme, Alex.
Yes, congratulations, you were terrific. They're always horribly snide, but I thought by the end you'd won them over.
Thank you, James.
That's because you're principled and because you have integrity.
Something friend Worsley could do with.
I think it's a bit too late for that, don't you? Speak of the devil.
An agitated-looking Worsley enters the room.
You'd think that forming a government might be more important than having lunch.
Worsley heads straight over to their table.
Alexander?
Brian?
Hello, Elspeth.
Hello, Brian. You know James Morpeth?
You've known me since Cambridge, Elspeth. Do you honestly think I would take bribes?
If you want to give us your side of the story, I'm more than happy to arrange an interview.
I've already said I know nothing about these so-called offshore accounts.
Elspeth gives Worsley a smile which doesn't reach her eyes, and Wentworth avoids his gaze.
Enjoy your lunch.
Worsley walks away.
Poor Brian. Dead man walking.
Elspeth gives Wentworth an A4 envelope.
What's this?
Just some facts to put Worsley in his political grave.
James raises his glass in a wry toast. Harry pulls up outside a backstreet boxing gym and heads inside past a burly minder. As he makes his way into the main training area, he sees a man on a cycling machine and a couple of others sparring in the ring. Someone approaches him.
All right.
All right. It's Dean in.
Dean who?
Dean Stubbs.
No. Sorry, mate. No, any. Dean Stubbs.
Do you mind if I have a little look around? I've been thinking of joining a gym.
Yeah. You should.
Harry heads over to a corner where a man with his hood pulled up is working out with a punch bag.
Looking for a friend of Joseph Collins. Joe's friend comes in here quite a lot. He's a boxer.
Name's Dean. Dean Stubbs. You're Dean, aren't you?
The man knocks him out with a single punch. In a flashback, Mark and Hillman get out of the car outside Braddock's house. Young Harry watches until they're out of sight. A police car pulls up behind him, and when he sees them in his wing mirror, he closes his eyes in despair. The policemen get out and head to his vehicle. As he rolls down his window to speak to the first officer, the second walks along the pavement, talking into a radio. Hillman and Mark appear, and Hillman fires the shotgun at the policeman. He fires again, and the second officer collapses across the car bonnet with blood spattered across his torso. The officer falls onto the road as Mark gets into the back, holding his stomach. Hillman climbs in beside Harry and mouths, "What are you waiting for? Go!" Gunsmoke hangs in the air above the two dead officers. Harry drives away. In the present, he comes to on a slatted bench in the gym changing room. He blinks and gingerly sits up, just as a naked man passes on his way to the shower cubicle. Harry painfully stands up, then spits on the ground. When he leaves the gym, it's absolutely pouring down, and he dashes to his car with his chin tucked in. He gets in, and the heavy rain drums on the rooftop. He puts his key into the ignition, but stops himself before starting the engine to sigh and mop his brow.
Yeah.
You know how many times I called you?
Great, how's it going?
Well, you're the lawyer, you tell me.
Yeah, right, listen, I'm on the way.
Come get here, lively itch. The judge has already told the jury he'll accept the majority.
Okay.
Harry starts the engine and pulls away from the gym. He arrives at the courts and makes his way into a room to find Frank shaking hands with a solicitor, another man, and a young woman.
See you later. Sorry. For a bit there, you weren't going to show it.
Hey, got your result, didn't I?
Hey, I'm an innocent man. If you can't get an innocent man off, what are you good for?
Well, the innocent ones are the hardest, believe me.
You don't look too good, H.
No word.
They head out together.
I met a woman.
Nice?
Yeah, she's beautiful. Intelligent. Looks like she's got a few quid.
Well, you should be a very happy man.
Well, on paper. Trouble is, I think she's trying to set me up.
For what?
The Braddock murder.
What do you mean, set you up? Who is she?
Well, she's a solicitor acting for Stevie Quirk. She wanted me to go and see him, so I did yesterday.
Well, what's Stevie got to do with Braddock?
He said he saw Paul Hillman.
You gotta be fucking kidding me.
That's what he said. Frank, I want to ask a little favour. It might not be, completely legal.
Harry.
What?
Hillman's dead.
I know.
Mark's dead.
I know.
You want my advice?
No.
Frank nods. A little later, Frank is apparently reading a newspaper at the bottom of some stairs in an elegant building. After a while, he gets up and walks to a door. He opens it a crack, then returns to his seat, raising his eyebrows at the frosty receptionist on his way. He takes his seat again. an elderly doctor is shining a light into Harry's eyes.
Is your vision at all affected?
No, it's fine.
Headache?
Yeah.
The doctor, Sturgis, puts his torch away.
How often do you take cocaine?
Well, I had a little line or two last night.
Is it a regular thing?
No.
We've taken an X-ray, but I'm going to recommend an MRI.
Well, I don't think it's that bad.
Just to be on the safe side.
You were recommended by a friend of mine, Gina Hawkes.
I'll make you an appointment. There'll probably be a bit of a wait.
As Sturgis opens a sealed package containing a hypodermic needle, Harry takes a look at the pills he pilfered.
She said the Zopiclone you gave her is really helping with her insomnia. She's a beautiful woman. Isn't she?
You'll need a tetanus shot.
As I said, Doctor, I don't think it's that bad. It was just a punch. There wasn't really any blood.
Sturgis squeezes a few drops of clear liquid from the needle, then turns to Harry.
Take your jacket off and roll up your sleeve. Roll up your sleeve.
Some other time.
Harry walks away and heads out onto the street with Frank.
What do you think?
Doable. But doable for what? What do you want?
Frank, I'm trying to find out who Gina Hawkes is. Now, she's on his books. He'll have her medical records, an address, something.
Okay.
Now it's all computerized.
I got a guy.
Call me when you're done.
He'll answer this time.
Yeah. Here you go. Expenses.
Kentish Town, please, mate.
Hitch.
Listen to me. Back when I was working, some mornings I'd be driving to the job and I'd look out and see all these people doing ordinary things, you know? Waiting at a bus stop, buying a coffee, buying a sandwich, and I'd like to look at them and I'd think, why am I putting myself through this? They're all relaxed, happy, probably. Me? I'm on my way to pull a robbery. Blood's beating in my veins. My head feels light and feeling sick. One time I turned to Wendell and I said, you know, we could stop. We could go to a cafe, have a coffee, read the paper, go home. We don't have to do this. You understand what I'm telling you?
Aaron, what did old Wendell say?
As long as you understand, because actions have consequences. That's just the law of nature.
We'll need to find out who killed Mark and why.
Yeah, even if I put you in prison for 20 years.
The corner of Harry's mouth twitches with a humorless smile. Then he gets into a cab. Frank steps back onto the pavement and watches it pull away. Harry pushes open a graffitied door and starts up the poorly lit staircase to his offices.
Yeah.
This is Gina Hawkes.
Where are you? I can be with you in 20 minutes. We can have lunch.
I'm on my way to Paris.
I'll get the train. We'll have dinner.
Have you thought about what we discussed?
I thought about you, Gina. Constantly. Day and night. If you really want to know.
Will you take the job?
If I can have a down payment of £10,000.
Call the Hutchins Trust Wilson number and leave your bank details. The money will be in your account by the end of the day.
Blimey, you work fast. I like that. So where are we having dinner? I like Paris.
I expect an update twice a day. One at midnight, one at 7 a.m. If at any time there's anything significant, you're to call me at once.
How do you define significant?
For instance, you've become a significant part of my life.
You will receive the balance of your fee when you locate Joe Collins. Once you find him, you're not to let him out of your sight until I get there.
Do you know what? If I ever get in trouble, I want you to be my lawyer, Gina. In fact, I will get in trouble just to have you as my lawyer.
Call me if there's anything else you need.
I'm sure there will be.
Goodbye, Mr. Van.
Gina. One more thing. You ever heard of a bloke called Jason Styles?
No. Why?
You know what you'd be smashing in the witness box? If I didn't know better, I believe you were telling the truth.
Just find Joe Collins, Mr. Van.
Harry.
Gina ends the call and looks unsettled, then wheels her suitcase across a raised walkway at the train station. Harry gazes out of his office window, then stares at the picture of Styles in his hands.
Hello?
Get out of there.
What?
Get out of your office, Harry. Now.
Who is this? Hello?
It's a private number.
Matt, come on.
Where are we going?
Harry walks out and Matt follows, looking slightly perplexed.
Come on.
So what's going on?
I don't know what's going on. Somebody just phoned me and wanted me to get out of the office.
What, is Francis coming with the gun?
Shut up, Matt!
You all right? Calm down.
They walk 20 metres or so down the high street.
Now you can stay out here if you want. I've got work to do.
The window of Harry's office explodes, showering glass onto the road and pavement. Harry looks shocked and bewildered, his breathing laboured. Next time.
Now, based on 30 years as a copper, I'd say that someone's trying to kill you.
And this woman's got a file on me.
The wrong type of person could take considerable advantage of that.
What do we want to achieve?
The end of Brian Worsley.
Don't come to Paris, Mr. Van.
And maybe she's the one in trouble.
If she is, take my advice. Run.
If you find anything about Quirk that can help, I'd be very grateful.
Something big is going on here, Frank. Somebody tried to kill me.
Sorry, Hitch. But you're mixed up in. I don't want to be mixed up in.
Hidden continues here on BBC One at the same time next week.